Last year, Creed asked me how to set up a blog. Wanting to protect the world from being exposed to Creed's brain, I open up a Word document on his computer and put an address at the top. I've read some of it. Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
This is Pete Holmes. I'm a comedian. I'm with my boy, Will. You're listening to the Homemade Broadcast, because you're smart.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Will the soundtrack kindly produce a sound? Go on, don't be nervous. Go ahead. Any sound? Well, that isn't quite what I had in mind.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, Radio St. Pete, HMB Radio on Radio St. Pete. My name is Will Koontz, host of this program. How are you? You good? I'm good, man. I'm good. Just got done recording three podcasts today. Not one, not two, but three. We had the City Hall broadcast live from City Hall. Well, it's not live, but it is recorded at City Hall. That's Evan Morey. Catch that on Radio St. Pete on Mondays, and in the archive, of course, and it goes on HMB Radio on Thursday morning, so you can catch it. Make sure you like the Facebook pages to keep up with everything going on, facebook.com/Radio St. Pete and facebook.com/HMB Radio. Of course, you can find us on Twitter. We tweet. Radio St. Pete is theirs, STPETE, and home_made_man is mine. So you can find me there, a good way to get in touch. You can, of course, call the voice or text line if you want. If you want to send a text message, 813-693-2124. It's just a voicemail box, so feel free to call in, say hello, whatever you want to do. Just be nice. You don't even have to be nice if you want to. I could take a little constructive criticism. I'm not above it. I'm not beyond it. So make sure you check out the City Hall broadcast. We got my mom's favorite podcast with James Bailey. There as well. More to come, from what I understand. I had a big meeting last week with some important people. So I think it's going to happen, I think. I haven't heard from anybody in a while, but pretty sure it's going to happen. This week on the show, we have Laura Wesley. She was on the program last year. Supposed to be on last week, but the hurricane rolled through her mind, and kind of disrupted that. She didn't want to drive in the rain, and I can't blame her for not wanting to do that. So she's on this week. That's all that matters. Make sure you check out Yard of Ale every Thursday, 10 to midnight, for the Yard of Laughs with Cigar City Comedy's John Jacobs and myself. I must admit, John does most of the heavy lifting with that. I kind of just sit around and drink and spend the money that I do make at the bar. But, hey, it's always a good time, 10 to midnight. I think it's 260 First Ave North, Yard of Ale, Thursdays, 10 to midnight, comedy open mic, be there. Sly Bar is no more, I think I already mentioned that. But they are still a sponsor of the program, so check them out. 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg, slybar.com. And, of course, my friend Chrissy Parker and the Truvy Salon and Spa, loyal patrons of this program. 8908 4th Street North, Unit B. And her phone number is, if this loads, come on. I got an old computer. It's time for me to upgrade, I think. It's definitely not the internet. 727-329-9751. Make an appointment. TruvySalonAndSpa.com. So, are you ready for November yet? Good God, am I. I cannot wait for this election to be over. I'm tired of seeing links posted constantly, trashing the candidate that whoever is posting it doesn't like, refuses to see that the other person is probably just as bad or worse. than their person. If you're going to do it, just why don't you post links to in support of your candidate instead of trashing the other one? Why you got to be negative? You know, I know there's a red versus blue aspect to this. It's a gang mentality. It's your sports team. It's that whole competitiveness. But if you really want to change minds, you should be posting positive stuff about the person that you do like and the good things that they do rather than posting how terrible the other person is. Because it's really not going to change anybody's mind. Frankly, when I see people doing that, it turns me off from that person. You're definitely not going to change my mind. I'm sure that nothing that you see on the internet is going to change your mind. So let's start to realize that this is a fruitless road we're going down, and it's time to stop. And what better time than today, right? So let's stop with this nonsense. November's around the corner. The way this year has been going, I mean, the year's almost over. I can't believe it. It's insane how fast it's been going by. I feel like, I guess we say this every year, though. You can't believe it. It's almost over. But, yeah, November is, I think, what, 60? We're 60 days away, 2 months? Oh, hallelujah. I cannot wait. I'm also excited for it to get a little cooler outside. I walked outside today, I think, and I was like, wow, it's actually not that bad out here. And then I took 2 steps into the sun, and I caught on fire. It was really embarrassing. I went out on Saturday down to Gecko Fest and covered the music down there, wore a tank top, and was destroyed on one side of my body. I thought I had sun poisoning. I'm a very fair man. Not fair as in, I think I'm fair, too, but complexion-wise, very fair. So if I'm out in the sun for 20 minutes, I just, yeah, burst in the flames, and I'm in a lot of pain for 2 days. So, anywho, I guess we can get Laura in here. I feel bad she came a little early, and James was recording his podcast, which he did solo this week. I don't know how he talks for an hour and a half about himself. I guess the marijuana helps, maybe? I don't know. But he's able to just ramble on and ramble on. My life is not that cool. So we're going to bring Laura Wesley, the War Virgin, in. I know she's got a book out. She's got the play that she did last year, toured around Pinellas County and Tampa Bay. She's going to be doing it at the Palladium. And that's how I was actually saw the banner when I was driving by because I live really close to the Palladium. And I saw her War Virgin banner. I was like, whoa. And I was actually going to reach out to her anyways, and she messaged me. So without further ado, here is Laura Wesley, the War Virgin, talking about upcoming War Virgin stuff. Laura, welcome. Welcome back, I should say.
Thanks, Will. It's great to be back. So much has happened since I was here last year.
I know. You've been busy, busy, busy.
I moved. Like, I grew up in this area, but I moved back from Boston. So I've been here for about a year, and I just published my book, and the new format of my show is getting ready to debut, and I'm taking it on tour. So lots of changes, getting, you know, settled into the community here in Florida.
Well, I went and saw it last year, I guess, and mm-hmm. It was just, where was it? It was in Dunedin.
It was at the Blur in Dunedin.
The Blur in Dunedin, yeah. And then I was just saying that I was driving by the Palladium a couple weeks ago, and I was looking at all the banners, and sure enough, there's a War Virgin banner.
You
and
I'm saw like, this whoa. 6 feet by 9 feet banner.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You got to keep that thing.
Yes.
Use it as wallpaper.
It is mine. I paid for it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so they give it to me after the show.
Oh, I was wondering how they did that. If they
they took my logo, and they have a graphic artist that works in the the Palladium has an amazing marketing department. Kudos to Deb Carson. I just need to say that she is amazing, and she does she's in charge of marketing for the Palladium, and they have a graphic artist there too who basically took my logo and, you know, incorporated it into that design to be specifically, you know, set up for those specs, and they put that together, and it was really inexpensive too.
Really?
So, I mean,
for
it,
that thing?
Yeah, at least like what I think it, you know, should cost. Yeah. It didn't seem bad.
Well, I got this thing. I don't know how much it costs, but my stepdad came by one day. I'm looking at my big, huge homemade broadcast banner that I have in the studio. And I was like, this is so big. I don't know what to do with it, but it fits perfectly
here. It looks amazing there.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much that costs them, but it's probably a pretty penny.
I'm sure. That's probably more expensive than what I paid for.
You think so?
The banner.
I don't know. That thing's huge.
I know, but it was surprising because I have other things that are being printed, like posters, and it didn't seem bad.
Yeah. So you're doing the show at the Palladium, and you said it's revamped now? So how is it different from last
year's? We've added some more scenes. So, and this could be like a segue into one of the topics I'd love to talk about tonight. So one of the things that so last year was like an experimental run of the show. We did six runs of it in the Tampa Bay area, and that was the first time that War Virgin was like a full-fledged play with actors in it, because it used to be a one-woman show. I got started performing in 2012 as a one-woman show, did that for a few years, then transformed it. And one of the things that I thought was really missing, and my show director thought too, was a lot of the religious oppression that's a really big theme within War Virgin, the book. So once I had finally finished the manuscript, my show director read it, and she's like, why are all these amazing, crazy church anecdotes and Bible study anecdotes missing from the show? And I'm like, I just ran out of time. When we put it together before, there was so much to do in transforming it originally. So she was like, we need to add those. And we have two more actors. So now we have a cast of six. It's an entirely new cast. I'm the only one who was in the show last year. It's the same director, Lil Barkowski. She's based out of Dunedin, and she's founded the Showcase Arts Foundation, which is a 501c3 that's actually putting on the show. Mm-hmm. They're producing it. So
let's talk about the religious oppression. What do you mean? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so that's a huge theme within War Virgin. I mean, War Virgin talks about, you know, repression, temptation, and liberation. Those are the three parts, and that's within the book and the show itself. And the last time I was on the show, you know, just to remind listeners, like, I talked a lot about, you know, my father and what he taught me about the birds and the bees and being under his thumb and being oppressed and the abuse that I faced as a child and like the triumph over that. And the same thing with like a lot of people that I served with in the military, especially like chain of command. Like, the book definitely has examples of sexual harassment and you know, gender inequality. But religious oppression, it definitely is a theme throughout the book. It started in childhood, like with my father using religion to keep me down, to keep me perfect, to keep me pure, to keep me a virgin. And there's a lot of things that I experienced at church too. It's almost like the church carried on his message. And then that kept happening at West Point, which was really surprising to me, because there's supposed to be this whole notion of separation in church and state, which, and at least when I was at West Point, that essentially didn't exist. And I know that still, you know, happens in the military. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but definitely, like, what you'll see in the show is I'm by birth and by heritage Roman Catholic, because I'm Italian, and that's just that's just the way it goes.
I was going to make the joke that you grew up in a Sunni Islamic household, but you beat me to it.
But you know what's funny? I've done this comparison. The way I was raised with very fundamental evangelical Christian notions and an abuse of that, like the abuse, it's very easy to abuse that. I felt like there's a lot of parallels between how maybe girls are raised in a fundamentalist Islamic abusive family, like with my father obsessing about my purity and me remaining a virgin, and then he lamented that I wasn't a son, and it's like I had to apologize for my gender, and then that theme kept carrying on at West Point and in the military. I feel like that's probably something very similar that, you know, a girl growing up in, you know, in an abusive fundamentalist Islamic family would experience. And so it's very disheartening when you hear hate speech against Islam from the very perhaps abusive Christians who are doing the same exact thing to their youth and to their women.
Yeah, I can see that. But there's also big differences, too, with some of that. I mean, extreme is, I guess, like keeping your daughter pure and keeping her sanctimonious. But then there's also a difference between throwing acid in your daughter's face and killing her for dishonoring the family.
Absolutely.
Too.
Like, yeah, you're not going to find that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, we definitely wanted to incorporate some of the crazy experiences that I had into this show. Like, there's my father decided that Catholicism wasn't good enough anymore because he had become born again.
Oh, okay.
And so I went from going to a Catholic church as a kid. I had a great time. I went to St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Newport Richey, Florida, and it was fun. I thought the people were great. We had a great community, really supportive. I got my first Holy Communion there. I thought I was on track for a good and happy childhood. And then my father became born again. And the Catholic Church wasn't good enough anymore because, like, you know, they didn't read the Bible. They used, you know, the Missalettes. And then the Catholic Bible has different books in it. And he just became such a holy roller. And he ripped us out of the Catholic Church and threw us into this Pentecostal church. It no longer exists, but it was Calvary Temple Church of God, uh-huh. also in Newport Richey. And, you know, there's a revival scene, and I'm watching my father become, like, slain in the spirit. And
was he doing the tongues and the...
The pastor was definitely doing the tongues, and so I wanted to capture that in the show. And, you know, as an 11-year-old, you're sitting there, you're watching this, and I'm
scary,
terrified,
right?
Absolutely terrified of what this whole slain in the spirit thing means. And then there's a revival, and they're asking everybody to become slain in the spirit. And so I don't want to give too much away. You got to read the book and see the show, but that definitely comes to light, that experience. So we added that in the show. And then we also wanted to add in the show more about the religious community that I was involved with at West Point, because it made me, basically my mentors told me that I wasn't as good as a man.
Literally verbatim told you that?
Yeah, and they would use Bible verses to justify what they
said. What was the context
said.
Of it? In what sense?
They told us that our number one mission in life is to serve our husbands, that he is the leader, and that he... And it was a very marriage-centric culture. I mean, I think you see this in the military. You definitely... I heard, like, in the past couple of years, it's not happening quite, you know, the numbers are not quite as high. But what you have at West Point is you have a high percentage of people getting married right after graduation, because you're not allowed to get married when you're at West Point. And some people do it in order to be stationed together in the military, because there's, you know, all these regulations. And if you're married, then the Army tries harder to let you be stationed together. There's rules in place to try to make that happen for families. It's not always that, you know, there's loopholes around it. And, you know, if you have to go to training, you can't help it. But especially when I was there, there was such a strict, you know, community that really obsessed about our purity and virginity. And it was the same thing that carried over from my childhood. And so instead of focusing on things like, okay, we're training to be warriors, we're training to be leaders. And while we were at West Point, like towards the end of my time at West Point, like things started, you know, happening in the Balkans. But outside of that, like we weren't at war. And my professors that I had, they had served in Desert Storm, which, you know, so they made it seem like, oh, everything's really easy. And then when we were doing all of our training, they're like, you know, we'd go to the rifle range and there'd be like these Ivan statues and they'd be like, kill the commies. You know, so we were basically like in a Cold War era training. Mm-hmm. So there was, you know, and I graduated right before 9/11. So there was no... foresight.
No more commies.
Yeah, exactly. That quickly changed for the classes after me. But while we're supposed to be training to be warriors, you know, they're it's a very marriage-centric culture, and they're obsessed about our purity and virginity. And so a lot of cadets, they just, you know, we're college kids. We have burgeoning hormones. We're stressed out. And, you know, there's a lot of people at West Point that, you know, try to have some semblance of a normal dating life. But for a lot of us that were really entrenched in the evangelical Christian community, trying to do right by God, trying to do right by Jesus, trying to follow the rules at West Point that says you can't have sex in the barracks, a lot of them hurry up and get married because they just need to get laid and subsequently get divorced a few years later because it's like 22-year-old kids. I mean, yes, they're leaders and they're officers, but in a lot of respects, you're still a kid at 22. You don't belong getting sure. married. And so that community really, besides really encouraging marriage, it's like that was supposed to be our number one focus, was finding a spouse. And then for the women cadets, we were supposed to, you know, follow our husbands and be his helpmate And so I definitely, especially my show director, she's like, you have to put this in the show. It's such an important message. And it really, I mean, I questioned it, but I also struggled with it. I dated someone while I was at West Point. I was engaged for a very short period of time. But I basically allowed myself to keep someone who was sexist. Like, I wouldn't even give this guy the time of day now. But because of being so trapped in that community and wanting to do right and please everyone, like, I tolerated a lot of his abusive behavior, and it was all supported by an abuse of Bible verses that talk about, you know, women submitting to men. And that impacts a lot of women at West Point. And so, and I see some of my friends today who I feel like that they follow a certain course in their lives, and I think it's determined by what the church pressures them to do.
You know, I'm wondering if, because when you go into boot, I've never been to boot camp, but mm-hmm. I know they break you down as who you are. You are just a thing now, and they remold you. I'm wondering if they use the, like, PSYOPs type of thing, and they use maybe a lot of these kids, I'm sure most of them grew up religious, kind of pound that into them to keep men and women kind of, because at that age, your hormones are blossoming, mm-hmm. and they're big distractions. Mm-hmm. You know, you get distracted by girls or guys.
Yeah.
I do now, but, you know, especially then. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if it was kind of pounded into you almost as a diversion to, you know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And I know that, I know West Point is about molding leaders, and they really govern how you behave. Like, you're so scrutinized for the 4 years, and I know they want to keep you in line. I know that they don't want you drifting off too much, but this is like a subset within West Point. It's not determined by West Point leaders, but it's like a subset, a demographic within there, like a subculture within there. And what's disheartening for people of other religions is that the military is, like, they have military chaplains, and they're supposed to be representative of all faiths. And a lot of the chaplains, like, you can come from whatever your background is and whatever you're ordained in, but you're supposed to...
Yeah, it's kind of impossible, isn't it? I mean, because everybody believes different things.
Yeah, and so they're supposed to be neutral in what they... Like, they're assigned a certain... you know, chapels and areas, but they're supposed to be neutral in the comfort and the advice that they give. But it just felt like everyone was all about evangelical Christianity when I was there. Like, there was, like, if I felt so much pressure. But also, like, the point that you've explained about going to basic training and being beaten down, that was another part of it for me. Like, you're stressed out. And you also struggle with loneliness. I mean, I certainly did, you know, being ripped away from your home, which was definitely a good thing for me. I mean, I needed that escape. And a lot of people join the military for an escape, too. You know, it's just like, you know, you're going to be taken care of. You know, you don't have to worry about where you're going to get your next meal or your paycheck or, you know, or anything like that. So a lot of people use that as an escape. And then I feel like people really prey on that, no pun intended, and then, you know, bring you into this community where they give you a lot of comfort. Like, that's the thing. It's like, in the same breath that these mentors would be like, you know, you need to be your husband's helpmate, and you're not as good, and you don't have to worry about being accountable to God because your husband will be. I'm like, well, why am I at West Point? Why am I here studying to be a leader and a warrior? And I'm an independent, you know, strong-willed kind of person. That's what attracted me to this institution in the first place. But I feel like that's what they prey on, you know, you being really vulnerable and looking for some source of connection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're listening to the Homemade broadcast on Radio St. Pete. I'm talking with Laura Wesley today. She's performing the War Version Saturday, September 17th, 8 p.m. at the Palladium Theater. Tickets available at mypalladium.org/war-virgin. You can call for tickets, 727-822-3590, warvirgin.com. They do prey on that, and it's not only religious-wise. I had a friend that joined the military because he was $10,000 in debt and had no way of getting out of it, so he just signed up for the Army.
That makes, yeah, absolutely. In my case, it was, you know, I didn't have to worry about paying for college. And there was no way that my parents were going to be able to pay for college. We were absolutely broke. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a way. There's a lot of financial incentives, a lot of educational incentives. And so It's really tough because I feel like people that come from more intact homes where they come from a better socioeconomic status and they have like more, support from their family. Like, I feel like those kids are better able, you know, they're able to make better decisions. And a lot of those also gravitate to West Point because they really believe in the ideals and what it stands for and serving their country in that capacity of being an esteemed leader. But I feel like they might be better equipped to make decisions and navigate the military in a better way. But yeah, if you're joining and you're desperate, there's a lot of ways that you could be steered in the wrong direction.
Yeah, your mindset's a little different if you're just in debt or if you feel like you're serving a purpose going into it.
Absolutely.
You said you graduated right after 9/11 or
right
before
9/11. So I graduated on June 2nd, 2001.
And then a few months later, it all went down. So what was your mindset like? Were you scared, like knowing that you were probably going to have to go somewhere not very nice?
And this is all documented in my book. This 9/11 was surreal. I was a brand new second lieutenant stationed at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, studying all of the regulations and of what my branch was. Like, I was a human resources manager. I was adjutant general corps, and I had to take a postal certification course. So I am legit postal according to the Army. So I was taking a test, and I remember going out into the lobby, and someone said something about a plane hitting the World Trade Center, and we turned the TV on, and then we saw the second plane crash into the second tower, and then they sent us all home, and I remember hearing about the towers crumbling on the radio on my drive home and turning the TV on and waiting for a phone call to find out what was going on. And it was surreal for all of us.
What city were you in?
I was at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. That's right outside Columbia, South Carolina. So I had been living there for, I think I reported there in July. So I was there for 2 months, taking training. I knew right at that time that they couldn't mobilized me for if there was going to be some kind of immediate response. I knew they couldn't mobilize me because I was in training. It was surreal for all of us. One of the things that I also talk about in my book is that you can't allow yourself to become scared or you'll become paralyzed with fear. So what happens, a lot of people in the military turn their brains off. There's like this amazing way that you want to serve and protect, to have that warrior spirit within your soul. But then also you have to turn your brain off because you can't overthink what your potential mission is. And I, 20, 2 years old when this happened. And I think now people are more mature when they graduate from West Point and they understand this, especially because they've been training at West Point while in a wartime situation. So I think that they're much better prepared. But I think that we really glossed over so many really important lessons and concepts. And so I didn't really grasp what could be asked of me. It was just kind of like, okay, now you're on this crazy ride and you just have to see what happens. And you just can't overthink it. So I had to kind of shut down for a really long time. And I think that's also where a lot of mental health issues happen much later, like years and years later, is because you turn your brain back on. You start to think about what happened and you process that and you're like, wait a minute, this is not right, and I'm not right. And I don't relate to normal people. So I was just kind of suspended in disbelief, but then at the same time, like, okay, I need to do what I need to do. Now the whole notion of going to Iraq instead of Afghanistan, that definitely didn't make any sense. when I got to my first duty station the following year and they're like, we think Saddam's stirring up some stuff. It's like you kind of question it. You're like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. But you can't really vocalize that too much because you're not supposed to question your chain of command. I do think, I mean, it's, you know, as much as people say, oh, social media this, and they may say negative things about it, I think social media in of itself is a very powerful tool, and it's made a lot of younger people more informed and more thoughtful, and they get to, you know, read a lot more opinions. One example of that is that when I was at West Point, I only met, in the entire 4 years, I only met one person who publicly claimed to be a Democrat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, a lot of people in the military are very, you know, we talked about religion. We have to talk about politics, too, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Let's have our own commander-in-chief forum tonight. But I don't want to play Trump. Anyway, that's, you know, that's a thing. Like, in the military, a lot of people hold their political opinions to themselves. And so it's the same thing with like questioning your chain of command, questioning the political climate. Like, that's pretty taboo. However, I think people nowadays, because of social media and because of the access to the internet and everything, they can, in their private lives, they can certainly find resources to learn more about, you know, political ideology or and develop their own informed opinions about things. But back in the day, we didn't have as much access. In fact, I think this is still the case. When I was in my freshman year at West Point, our first semester, we weren't even allowed to listen to music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, and we were only allowed to watch TV on certain nights, and you had to go to the basement and the day room in order to watch it. And, you know, we were given the New York Times, but, you know, you're so crazy stressed out. You're not, you know, not that, that's it. That was basically the only thing that we had given to us, is like, if you have time to read the New York Times, that's it. Mm-hmm. But then to have some kind of like open discussion about beliefs and politics and religion, like that just didn't happen.
I don't know if it's a good idea to do that, because you're supposed to be a unit, you know, you're unified as one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you should talk religion or politics in the military. You should just be focused on the task at hand, right?
It depends. I mean, I know that when you have to go forth and execute a mission, that could be dangerous. You know, you certainly want buy-in with that. But at the same time, look at the debacle that we've gotten ourselves into with the aftermath of Iraq and the development of ISIS, which I totally attribute to us invading Iraq. You know, talk about feeling like, oh, that's kind of my fault. I mean, not me personally, but I participated in something like that.
Right.
I know I go back and forth. I'm writing an op-ed about it. I think that, yes, you need buy-in with a mission, and if it's not a popular mission, you're supposed to do it anyway, and you could threaten the integrity of that mission if there is dissent. However, I think that allows bad things to perpetuate, and when people aren't able to question it or have an open discourse or feel like their opinions are heard, I think that's how we can get into danger. And just look at the past, you know, 13 years with Iraq.
So hindsight's 20/20, though. Knowing
absolutely
what we know now, I think, of course, we, meaning the U.S. government and the generals and whoever, army, you know,
mm-hmm,
whatever,
mm-hmm,
would have done things probably a lot differently, I would hope. So, you know, going back, you have to have a commander who mm-hmm says, all right, this is what we got to do. And you got to go with them, right? You don't want any dissent in that, because that's a – I just – I got the audiobook for Art of War.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever read that?
I skimmed through it.
It was read by...
I think I was supposed to read it.
Yeah. It was great, but I only bought it because it was read by Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. I don't mm-hmm know if you're familiar with that show. But...
Yeah, I've never watched Game of Thrones. I mean, I've seen like clips here and there.
I know it's
super popular, but...
I get mad at everybody when they say
that. You know what,
that
though? I actually like don't have... I really have like no time right now to watch TV.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally I'll turn the news on, but it's really, you know, with what I'm doing, with the mm-hmm book and the show, it's very challenging
right,
to find
right,
TV time.
But anyway, so they were talking about how you have to have cohesion mm-hmm within your units. Otherwise, it all disintegrates. So you have to have your commander, and you have to just trust that they're doing the right thing.
That's the problem.
Right. But see, you don't know, because at the time you think you're doing the right thing. I mean...
I didn't think that of my chain of command when we were in Iraq. And I think I started pushing back. Once we were there, I remember going up to not my immediate supervisor, but his supervisor. We're on a convoy. Like, I wasn't given a map. I wasn't given a radio. we're traveling at 2 miles an hour with our headlights on. And we just, like, for 3 weeks, it's like we were just driving aimlessly to me, because it's not like I was told, here's point A, here's point B, and on this day we're going to go to this point. And the purpose of that is this. Nobody briefed us in that capacity. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder if they even had any clue what they were doing. So I really, I could see it. And maybe soldiers at a certain rank don't need to concern themselves with that, but then they're putting their lives in the hands and at the mercy of their leader. And if their leader is flawed, or if their leader is doing something with bad intentions, they could get killed. And so that's why I'm like, how do we prevent things that happen to me and soldiers dying unnecessarily? Like, how can you prevent that?
And but yeah, I mean, that's something you understand when you sign up, that you may lose your life by doing that.
You do understand it. And I think nowadays, with our nation having been at war for so long, people definitely grasp that now. But when you join during peacetime, right, it's like a, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. And then it's a theory, you know, it's a theoretical situation. And then 9/11 suddenly made it a possible reality. So it's really tough, because, and I knew that my chain of command, I felt like they were jockeying for glory, and they were fighting to get awards. They were, you know, having us do these weird antics on our convoy that just seemed completely unnecessary. So then they can claim that there was some kind of battle, or they kicked in a door and did this heroic thing, even though it was like a dilapidated building with nobody in there, just for the sake of saying, I did this, putting it on an award citation and then getting some like valorous award. So my book is chock full of examples like that, where I think that a lot of valorous awards, like Bronze Stars and even awards higher than that, are given out, and it's a disgrace. And so I definitely want to reveal how that happens, because when those commanders are trying to do that, they're putting our lives at risk. And it's unnecessary. It's not like the Iraqi forces were doing that to us. It's not like they were causing us that kind of threat. It's all what we were doing ourselves. And so because of this hindsight, I'm like, how can we prevent this from happening? I mean, yes, we need better leaders. And that's why it's really important, you know, who we elect as our commander in chief, not Donald Trump. And it's really important. I think that the military needs to do a better job of vetting their leaders, because they're given so much power, and because they have the potential to cause so much destruction.
So Laura Wesley's joining me on the podcast today. So knowing what you know now, would you have signed up for the military?
No. My show director likes to joke that my main purpose in having served was so I can have this crazy musical comedy show and this book. I mean, there's an important message to it. It's not just to laugh. You know, it's a really important message of like liberation and equality. And you had touched before about like a unit needing to be uniform. I actually have like a counter theory to that, you know, I'm concerned with the whole notion of uniformity and having to like project this macho persona, which oftentimes would be white, male, Christian, gun-toting, extrovert, you know, that actually can be a danger and propagate hate and discrimination in the military. And I would like for the military to embrace the notion that warriors can come in all sorts of shapes and sizes and ideologies, and that there is a way to compromise and still be able to work together and discuss, you know, what's going on, and still come to the conclusion, okay, even though we've exhausted this, we still have to do this mission, or okay, maybe we're going to do this differently. I have a really good friend who was accused of being a coward in Iraq because she brought up the notion that she didn't think it was, she was very hesitant about a mission that they were, you know, firing on civilian houses. And she's like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. And then the thing is, at West Point, we took a class on the Geneva Conventions and the philosophy of war. And she's like, this just doesn't seem right. And instead of her opinion being respected, especially because she's a woman, they called her a coward. And so there's got to be a way that, you know, I mean, we'd have to embrace a complete paradigm shift and a new culture. But I'm hoping with more and more narratives that come forth, like I hope, okay, if I write this kind of narrative, other people have to have not necessarily the same stories, but similar sentiments in their lessons that they've learned. And maybe there is a way that the military can adopt a new culture.
I just feel like if you're at war, you want a killing machine, a cold-blooded killing machine that's going to do the job, not ask questions, and just get it done. If you're going to go to war, which I feel like should be a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's the thing. It's not a last resort with that mentality, because then you have these amped up people that are trained in their training. It's like kill, kill, kill. And so that's, they get conditioned for that. And so then if there's a potential conflict, they're going to go on the side of, yes, let's start a war. Let's kill, you know, because that's how they've been groomed for years and years and years.
I just feel like that's the point of the military. I don't know. I can't get over that. Like, that's the whole point.
I think that the military, it's about leadership, and I think that war should definitely be a last resort. I mean, I'm very anti-war now, and I think that there's other ways to resolve conflict. You know, I think that we should aim to be peacekeepers, and that if we do have to enter a conflict for whatever reason, it shouldn't be to promote the economic portfolio of leaders. You can get me started. I just finished reading Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and it talks.
Oh,
a lot.
Who wrote that? Somebody told me to read that.
Perkins. I forget
who said to read
his
that.
His last
name is
Perkins. I think I may have it up on here. But especially reading about his insight with like the Bush Senior and Bush Junior and Halliburton, and I definitely, you know, touch on Halliburton in the book, and I make some jokes in the show about it. But I just read that recently. I know it came out, you know, like I think 2005 is when it was published. But just with releasing this and reading that, I'm just like, yeah, it's like it's validating that I feel like I was a pawn some like political battle, and so. When you have like the warfighters that are like kill, 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 it's so easy to use them as a disposable resource. And then you can have corrupt leaders that are, you know, using them for their own economic and political gains. And that's so dangerous. I think it's destroying our nation. It's destroying our economy. I think it's destroying our diplomacy, you know, with other countries. I think it's destroying humanity. And so I feel like we really have to pull ourselves out of that mindset. But certainly in the event of a particular, battle, you definitely want people who are going to do it. But I also think like I think about the capturing of Osama bin Laden, and I happened to
allegedly
right. So I actually went to the Hillary rally yesterday at USF and she spoke about that. And I know that there were so many discussions and deliberations, you know, at her level. And I feel like with Navy SEALs that they probably had extensive discussions. And I know that they had to train that particular mission over and over and over again. And I think that in the special operations community, they are encouraged to think and speak out. Like you have to have a certain, you know, level of intelligence and pass all of these different exams in order to be a part of that community, not just physical, but, you know, mental. And I feel like in the special, I have a very hard time seeing that executing a mission like that, that they were just like, go kill, go kill, go kill. Like, I'm sure it was very well thought out. And that the person who is, and it was probably really well thought out too. Like, you will be the one that will pull the trigger,
right?
If you find him.
Yeah. All right. Final thoughts. That's it.
I am honored to share my story with the community. It feels amazing to be back in Florida and have all of this support. I encourage everyone to go on Amazon and get my book, War Virgin. It's in a soft cover and a Kindle version. And
you're gonna do an audiobook?
I would love to do an audiobook one day.
That'd be cool. I just got into those. They're great.
Do you have it all set up where I could do that here?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it.
I want to play a role in it.
Oh my God, that'd be so much fun.
Laura will be performing the War Virgin at the Palladium Saturday, September 17th, 8 p.m. The Palladium is located at 253 5th Avenue North, St. Petersburg, mypalladium.org /war-virgin. Laura, thank you very much for coming in. I appreciate you.
And I'm taking it on tour.
where at quickly?
Oh yeah, I'm going to Boston right after that. Asheville, North Carolina. West Point for my 15-year reunion. Savannah in Washington D.C.
Nice, Laura. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
appreciate
Will.
It. We'll talk to you next week. Facebook.com/HMB Radio. You can follow me on Twitter @home_made_man. Have a great week. See ya.